From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1944 in England by a man named Donald Watson. He founded the Vegan Society in England, initially explaining that it was for non-dairy vegetarians, but later Watson added that the Vegan Society had a doctrine that, quote, man should live without exploiting animals. Watson published his first newsletter that year called Vegan News. 7 years later, the doctrine grew broader. Vegans, according to the society, should not use animals for food or commodities, work, hunting, or all other uses involving exploitation of animal use by man, end quote. Those were the origins, and the vegan community has grown worldwide. It wasn't that long ago that author Michael Pollan, in his books about food, wrote seven words that a lot of people still remember. Eat food, not too much, mostly plants. Well, today, the vegan diet can serve as an asset to those struggling with diabetes or other conditions. We're spending this hour looking at how we eat and why, and if we're going to make some choices, how we make it, well, delicious. That's what Matt Miller's job is. He's the chef of the Owl House restaurant in Rochester. Matt, thank you for being here.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
Very good. And Joy Valvano's here. Joy is the clinical diabetes educator for Rochester Regional Health System and runs an upcoming class that we're going to be talking about. Joy, nice to see you.
Thanks, Evan. Nice to see you.
All right. So let me start with this. I'm not vegan. Joy?
I am vegan.
Okay. I would assume so. I don't know. We have to ask. Matt, no way.
I refer to myself sometimes as a recovering vegan. I was vegetarian and then vegan for a period of about 8 or so years. And I've been an omnivore for about, I think, 2 to 3 years now.
Okay, interesting. And so we're going to talk about some of the differences that you've experienced in eating and diet. We'd love to hear from our listeners if you want to join the conversation about your choices when it comes to diet, veganism, and more. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Now, Unity Health, or should I say the Rochester Regional Health System, I always make mistakes with this, but that's okay, Joy, because it's you. You've been running this class for several years now, and it's called the Seeds of Change Vegan Class. It's back, and it's happening. Let's see, you're starting a week from today, right?
Yes, we are.
Four weeks of it?
4 weeks, 4 2-hour sessions, Wednesday night, 6 to 8 p.m.
6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday night, starting a week from today. So the 8th, I should say the 8th, is it every Wednesday or it's not? It's 8th?
Yeah, it's the 8th, 15th, 22nd, and 29th.
See, that's why the note that I have says 8th and the 11th, and I'm not good at math, but I didn't think that was 7. 8th, 15th, 22, and 29. So all the remaining Wednesdays this month at the Unity Diabetes and Endocrinology Center, and the class is $120. You've been doing it for a number of years now.
Yeah, I think this is our fourth year. We've been running 2 to 3 sessions a year.
And how's it been going?
It's been great. I mean, it's a very popular class. We get a wide variety of individuals interested in the class, people who are vegetarian and want to explore moving more to a full plant-based diet. We have people who just want to incorporate more plant-based meals into their diet, not necessarily with the intention of becoming strictly vegan. And we found that a lot of people come because they are aware that the diet promotes a healthier lifestyle in terms of reducing cholesterol or, you know, may promote reduced blood pressure and even reduce blood sugars.
Have you read Michael Pollan's stuff?
I have, yes.
Eat food, not too much, mostly plants. He joked that when he gave those three sentences in seven words out, his publisher was furious because he basically just told the book in seven words. But when he says eat food, not too much, mostly plants, he means real food, not processed stuff, not from the middle of a grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think, one of the things we like to highlight in the class, that we're really talking about a whole foods plant-based diet. So really trying to get away from the refined processed foods.
But this is a great time of year to do it, Joy. And again, the class, $120, and Unity Health System is running this class, The Seeds of Change, at the Unity Diabetes Center. It's a perfect time of year for it because whenever we talk about farming, sustainable agriculture, farm markets, we've had different topics on this program. I inevitably get a listener question either on the air or by email afterward that says, that's all great, but you can't do that in the winter here, that you can't find a plant-based diet here, at least without you know, with much variation at all. And I'm sure you've heard that. What do you tell people who have doubts about getting through winter when harvest is over?
Well, I think, again, you know, one of the things that you want to think about is, as much as possible, you want to have local fresh foods. Certainly, there are options around, you know, people who are very into this can and freeze and, mm-hmm. you know, set foods aside from the summer for the winter. But you do the best you can. I think that there are a lot of root vegetables that are still available that you can keep over the winter. And, you know, certainly greens and such. So I think, you know, in my opinion, you know, you do the best you can with that. And if you need to incorporate some frozen foods or, you know, that are, you know, perhaps organic or, you know, not as processed, then that's what you do.
There's a wonderful book called Canning for a New Generation written by Leanna Krissoff, and it looks at very interesting and flavorful canning techniques that really isn't the previous generation's canning. Really spices it up, and my wife and I have used it. It's really fun. And but having said that, let me ask the chef in the room, Matt Miller, give me a vegan recipe, a dead of winter vegan recipe that is wonderfully delicious.
Dead of winter. I mean, winter to me is always squash time. Once we start to enter into this period, you know, get a couple different types of squash together, roast them up, delicata, butternut, some acorn squash maybe. Get something else, like, could even be something as simple as rice, maybe some lentils. Cook those up for your base. Give it a nice little sauce on top. Something as simple as adding chili flake to maple syrup to give it a little bit of spice. You know, there you go. Right there. That's a dish.
Yeah. I love maple syrup with squash dishes, by the way. My wife makes an acorn dish that's got some and it's stuff that you wouldn't necessarily think about, especially if you don't eat a lot of squash.
Right.
It's probably more versatile than people think.
It's definitely more versatile. You know, it can adapt to a lot of flavors. It's easy to balance. And that's the main thing, too, especially in a plant-based diet, is that if people think it's too boring for them, it's not. I mean, it's all about just finding the balance in flavors with the right amount of acid from vinegar, the right amount of salt or sweetness or spice to things. That's what makes food interesting.
How often are you experimenting with recipes?
I would say probably at least one a week, if not more than that. Right now, we're in the middle of writing a new menu for the fall and winter time, so there's a lot of experimenting going on. But, you know, myself and other people in the kitchen, we're always thinking of things, seeing things that we're inspired by that we want to try. And, I mean, that's kind of how you keep it interesting, keep your menus interesting, is taking in all that you can and trying to make it yourself, trying to make it your own, and seeing where you can go from there.
See, this is just proof, as we talked to Matt Miller from the Owl House, but we could have had someone from Aladdin's. We could have had, you mentioned Red Fern's, a restaurant that does all vegan.
Red Fern is entirely vegan. Give a shout out to our peeps over at Red Fern. There's, I mean, Dogtown's even got great vegan options. You go somewhere like, you could go to, say, Soul Burrito. They have some vegan options for you. A lot of it's really in the last several years has opened up a lot compared to how it was even 5 years ago, say, where if you're vegan, you really have a lot of options when you're going out.
Compared to 5 years ago. And that tracks with what Laura writes to us on Twitter. She says, about a year ago, I joined a 30-day vegan challenge. I extended it 5 months. I'm no longer 100% vegan, but sometimes I forget dairy exists. But she adds, she basically doesn't dine out. And you're saying, hey, you've got more options than you did before. You may not know about it.
So many options.
You may not know about it. Do people come to the Owl House and say, hey, I'm vegan, I need these options, or I've heard about you, et cetera? How many people are verbalizing that?
I would say maybe about 50% or so verbalize that. I mean, at one point we had specially printed vegan and gluten-free menus, mm-hmm. too, so that people who wanted to come in and say, you know, they don't have to take the time to search for their vegan options. It's all picked out for them. Now we don't do that so much just because there are so many options, and a lot of the sandwiches, for example, will flip both ways where you can get it with a beef burger or a veggie burger or tofu, chicken. We take the time to make sure that a lot of components are made vegan just so that you can use it for something else. You can double up on that. And going vegan is kind of always an option in the back of your head when you're doing that stuff.
I think of Art Rogers' lentil and quinoa burger at Lento. Fantastic. And then I think of at Poor Coffee Parlor just off of Park Avenue. There's something that they claim is a vegan chocolate chip cookie, and it's so good that I hate to say this because Joy's going to hit me with a wooden spoon or something, but I didn't think it could possibly be vegan because I did not know you could make it that good. And if our friends at Poor are listening, you have to tell me who makes those, because they're better than even the mains, the standard. So I guess we shouldn't be naysayers, Joy.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I think, you know, as Matt said, there's so many options, and the idea that eating vegan is boring is kind of an outdated idea. I mean, it used to be that the only thing you could eat was brown rice and broccoli, but that's really not the case. There's a lot of inventive chefs out there like Matt. There are, I mean, if you go online or you go to the bookstore, I mean, there are a lot of, depending on what your personal food preferences are, you can find lots of options.
Well, let's get to the phones here. If you want to join the conversation again, you can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Ted Barnett's on the line with us. Ted, thanks for joining the program. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How about you?
Good.
Hello, Joy. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey. All right, how are you?
Doing all right.
What do you think of what you're hearing here, Ted?
Let me just identify myself.
Yeah.
Sure. My wife, Carol, and I are the co-coordinators of the Rochester Area Vegetarian Society. We've been vegan for 23 years. We have raised three vegan children who are now 22, 25, and 27. I'm also a physician. I'm what I call a high-tech doctor with low-tech solutions. So what I do is actually what's called interventional radiology. So I basically poke people with imaging guidance. But I'd like to think that if people can follow a healthy diet, they won't need my services, which, how many people are trying to put themselves out of business, right?
it's a good point.
Yeah.
But how much have you seen just a vegan lifestyle change for you, and especially for your kids? You said your kids are 22, 25, 27. How much have things changed for them?
Well, in the last 23 years, things have become much better, much easier. I mean, they were very fortunate. They went to public schools in the Rush Henrietta district, and you know, there's a big emphasis on diversity, so being vegan was just another minority group in a way. And they were treated extremely well, but they still had to bring their lunches to school. But, you know, now when you call the airlines, you know, you can ask for dozens of different kinds of menus, including vegan. So, if, you know, if you ask for vegetarian, they say, what kind? And you just tell them vegan. So things have gotten a lot easier. There's a lot more prepared foods in the supermarkets. On the other hand, just to echo something that you were talking about earlier with Joy, we don't necessarily advocate a lot of prepared foods. The whole food plant-based diet is really the way to go.
Well, and Ted, you bring up an interesting point that I confess I have not thought of, and I'm sure I'd like Joy to address this as well. If you are going to try to adhere to a vegan lifestyle and you want to raise kids that way, you do have to eventually think about what schools offer. And I don't know if schools have gotten any better at that. You know, again, your kids were, you know, they're not in public schools now, and so I don't know how connected you are to how things have changed there, Ted.
Sure. Well, that's a whole other discussion, which I'm not a real expert on. You know, school lunches are, let's say they're getting a little better, but they're not really healthy for anybody, honestly, at this point. So, you know, there's, and that's why I'm not sure I want to go to discuss that, because, like I said, I'm not a real expert on it. I do have friends who are working on that. I think if you're really trying to eat healthy, whether you're vegan or not, you might consider bringing your own.
Well, let me ask Joy then. Have you followed it at all? I mean, what's going on in the schools?
I think that the schools, there is certainly some movements out there across the nation to incorporate more plant-based foods and more healthful options, school gardens and that kind of thing. I'm not sure what's really happening locally. But one thing I would like to ask Ted to mention is the class that he offers. He also offers another class that I think, has it started yet, Ted, or starting soon?
Yeah, no, it already started. We have, it's a 6-week course that goes on, and it started on Monday, the 22nd of September. So we've already met twice. We have four to go. And it's actually accredited through the University of Rochester. So physicians and other medical professionals can actually get professional credit for taking the course. It meets for 2 hours or 2 1/4 hours from 6:45 to 9 o'clock. It's at the JCC. This is the sixth time we've given the course, and counting the people who are taking it now, there's been 275 people in the Rochester area who have taken the course, including physicians. And we're really proud of that. I mean, it's been really exciting to be able to do that. I don't think there's too many places in the country where you can have access to that. And it's at the JCC. We're very grateful to them for the support they've given us.
So you've got that class, and again, you've got the Unity Diabetes Center with the Seeds of Change vegan class that kicks off a week from tonight, four 2-hour classes, 6 to 8. Yeah. And Joy, if people want to sign up for the classes that you're hosting, how do they do that?
What they should do, probably the best way, since we're getting close to time, would be to call 368-4560, which is the office phone number, and mention that they're interested in the Seeds of Change class. They can ask for myself or for Sharon. I'm actually going to be away from the office for the rest of the week, so the best person probably to ask for is Sharon, and then they can get information there about registering.
Okay, and they are online, unityhealth.org, but again, 368-4560, probably an easier way to do it for the Seeds of Change classes there. We've got a comment on Twitter, and I actually don't know the person's. They have an interesting handle. It's Fly Rabbit Press. I don't know Fly Rabbit Press, but Fly Rabbit Press says, one of my biggest challenges when I was vegan, too much soy. Definitely something to be aware of. Matt Miller, what do you make of that?
I mean, it's a thing that can happen, definitely. You have a lot of, there's a lot of soy going around, basically. It's like tofu, tempeh is soybeans, soy milk. I think that a little bit of that is people maybe being slightly more worried than they need to be. But, you know, there's alternatives to that stuff, too, as far as, like, non-dairy milk goes, almond milk, coconut hemp, all those other types of milk. As far as tofu and tempeh and things like that go, with slightly more processed soy, you know, try and move away from those things. There's ways to make meals for yourself that don't involve that. That's kind of like a way of replacing a meat protein with what's basically a vegetable protein substitute. You know, maybe instead of having rice and vegetables and tofu for dinner, maybe have eggplants instead as the star of that, or you know, sweet potatoes or anything like that. Move more towards the less processed foods instead of that.
Interesting. What about in the Seeds of Change class? What about soy? Where does soy rank?
I agree with Matt. I think soy's gotten a bad rap over the years. I think the more recent research shows that it's not as harmful as we once thought. I mean, certainly the isolated soy products, so the soy protein powders, and are probably a good idea to stay away from, as well as the more processed soy foods. Sometimes those are kind of a convenient way to start being vegan with, like, the soy burgers and stuff. But again, you know, excellent sources of protein and fiber and carb are beans and lentils and split peas. And so, you know, getting a variety of those foods in, they're more whole foods, is another way to not overdo the soy.
All right, Ted, what did you have for lunch today?
What did I have for lunch? Well, actually, I haven't had lunch. I'm at work yet.
what's your lunch today?
Let's see. My wife made me some kind of a stew. Actually, I have to admit, I did eat that already because I nibbled this morning, and it was a black bean, kind of an African stew with greens and a little bit of coconut in it. So it was really delicious. Actually, I would like to just echo kind of what Joy and Matt said. You know, soy is not really a problem. It's just that for some reason it's become kind of the centerpiece in a lot of ways. And it's really overrated, I think, in that sense that we don't really need to worry about protein. But let's just look at countries where they do eat a lot of soy, like in Japan and even Okinawa, which is one of the blue zones in the world, where, you know, people do eat a lot of soy, but it's relatively less processed soy. And those people have the longest lifespans in the world. So, you know, I wouldn't be overly concerned about soy. But getting back to the whole protein issue, you know, it's like one of the first things that people get asked when people find out you're vegan, they say, well, where do you get your protein? And it turns out that if you're eating whole foods, you will get enough protein. You can't really not get enough protein on a whole food plant-based diet. You know, even like people think of potato is carbs, right? So how much protein is in a potato? Well, about 11% of the calories in a potato are protein. And you only need to get about 7% of your calories from protein. So already, you know, that's how the Irish did it, right? They lived on potatoes. You know, it's really hard to find any plant-based food that doesn't have at least 7% protein. So it's really not even an issue. Now, if you're living on, you know, soda and potato chips, you could theoretically do it because you're adding a lot of empty calories.
But again, Joy, you said beans is a great source for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and they're so versatile. I mean, yeah. I mean, it definitely, you can do chili. You can do, you know, beans and greens. You can do rice and beans.
Cold, hot, right, Matt?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We've seen it ourselves at the Owl House. Our phone calls are starting to pile up, and that's great. If you're just joining us, we're talking about going vegan. The Seeds of Change vegan classes start a week from today. Unity Health System providing the classes, those classes, $120 for 4 2-hour classes with Joy, and Joy is here. And Joy's been doing it for several years, and they are a huge hit. You can still get online and register at unityhealth.org, or you can call 585-368-4560. So Joy Valvano's here, the clinical diabetes educator for Rochester Regional Health System. Matt Miller's here. He's the chef of the Owl House. And on the line, we've got Ted from the Rochester Area Vegetarian Society. Before I get to the phone calls then, Joy, since we already had that question online, what's the quick definitional difference between vegetarian and vegan?
The big difference is someone who's vegan eats no animal products, including dairy, including even honey or gelatin. So it's just anything that comes from an animal, period. Whereas vegetarians sometimes, you know, some people, there's a lot of different types of vegetarianism. Some people allow dairy, but no red meat or chicken. Some people allow fish. So vegan is just no animal products whatsoever.
And some people go vegan for health reasons. In our second half hour, we're going to talk more with Joy about diabetes and pre-diabetes and those kind of concerns and where vegan can fit in. Some people do it for ethical reasons. We have Barry writing to us on Facebook saying, I was a vegan for 17 years. I was a vegetarian off and on as a teenager, and in college made the full transition. It went well. The worst part was social awkwardness when you were a guest in someone's house. The best part was not supporting the mistreatment of factory farm animals and the destruction of the environment. So before I get to the phones, let me ask Ted and Joy especially, when you're visiting people's houses, do you try to warn them in advance about diet? I think a good host will ask anyway, right? A good host will ask if there's any dietary restrictions, right, Ted?
Absolutely. Well, that's a great question. I mean, pretty much everyone knows that my wife and I are vegan, and, you know, as a vegan physician, my colleagues certainly know that. So, we have vegan Thanksgiving, but we usually go to people's house that they're already vegan. So, you know, there's no question there's social issues about it. But, you know, I think anytime you have any kind of a special diet, there's going to be some social awkwardness, as one of your emailers mentioned. So.
What do you say, Joy?
Yeah, I think that it's always a good idea to let people know, because most hosts want to be sure that they accommodate their guests. And I think it's also really acceptable to offer to bring something to add to the meal that does meet the vegan, or if you have other dietary concerns, certainly that falls into it, but that can be shared with other guests so that, it, you know, if the host is unfamiliar or uncomfortable making something vegan, you can offer to do that for them.
All right, let's take a very short break. And when we come back, we're going to get to Danielle, Andy, Pete, waiting to talk and join the conversation about going vegan. That's the conversation on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Evan Dawson, and you're listening to Connections on member-supported public radio. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, we explore two of the most important issues to unions this election season. Maybe you've heard of the Wicks and Scaffold laws, but you're not sure what they are. The business community says those laws unfairly raise costs for projects. Unions say the laws protect workers. We'll wade through all of it Thursday on Connections.
Fighting corporate fraud is one of the government's top priorities, but it's nothing new.
Soldiers complained about shoddy uniforms that would dissolve in rain, gunpowder and cannons and guns wouldn't fire, and a lot of it was mixed with sawdust.
Why a Civil War era law is so effective at fighting fraud today. That story later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. To the phones we go. This is Danielle in Rochester. Danielle, thanks for calling.
Actually, I'm in East Rochester right now.
East Rochester.
I'm calling for a couple of reasons. First of all, I want to thank Ted. I went to his class at the JCC, the first one he had, and it was outstanding. It was really terrific. Second thing I want to say is I think we older people who are not accustomed to eating vegan can really learn from our children, which is what I did. And because my kids are, and my grandson is being raised vegan, and he's super healthy. He's hardly ever had a cold, and he's 2.5. So what I'd like to say is just that when you're eating vegan, it doesn't have to be just interesting. It can be really exciting. And the one way that you can do that is I took this 21-day challenge online, and they gave you all these kind of menus and delicious food to make, and I discovered that I actually enjoyed cooking, and it was a lot more fun. But the big thing that I want to say just is that I think we can learn from people who are different than us, and this is an example. There's a wonderful program called Forks Over Knives, and I thought maybe one of you guys could talk about it. And the other piece is if you want to taste really delicious food, you can get addicted to the red fern food. It's outstanding. So anyway, it's thank you to everybody. But most of all, what I want to say is just that I think that we have something to learn from people who are different than us. And it happens in food also.
Well said, Daniel. I appreciate that. And Matt, you already said, you already gave a shout out to your friends at Red Fern. Is it Red Fern?
Yeah, Red Fern, over on the corner of Park in Oxford, if anyone wants to take a stop by there.
See, people from the Owl House sharing the love. And we should say that as much as Matt's here to help rep what the food industry is doing, Owl House is not exclusively vegan or vegetarian. No. You have a wide...
What we try and do is accommodate everyone. Basically, whether you're vegan, whether you're vegetarian, gluten-free, you're an omnivore, whatever thing you have, come in, tell us about it. We'll try and make it work for you. You know, when you come into the Owl House, we want you to leave happy, basically. And if that means that we have to rearrange a couple things for somebody's dietary restriction, that's fine. That's something that we do every day. So,
Joy, can you weigh in on more of what Danielle was talking about there? I mean, she's talking about learning from people who are different, and she's raising some other points as well about just the value of some of these classes and the impact they can have.
Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of us, speaking for myself, you know, we can get into routines with how we eat, as with other things in our lives, and sometimes to step out of the box and try other things can be very rewarding. And, you know, a lot of people do, there's like Meatless Mondays, or, you know, even once a week start incorporating a more of a plant-based meal. Can be fun, can be exciting. There are a lot of great websites out there. One that I think is a real good starting point for a lot of people is the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. It's PCRM.org. And I think the 21-day challenge that Danielle was referring to is offered on that website. It's a great resource for people who want to start looking at plant-based options is, you know, there's recipes, and there's a lot of information on that website in terms of both health-related and animal rights and that kind of thing, ethical reasons for choosing this style of eating.
Ted, can you weigh in as well? Are you still? Yeah, go ahead, Ted.
I'm here. Yeah. Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, really fabulous organization. And basically anything you get from there is trustworthy. It's PCRM.org. Joy, I'm glad you mentioned that. And I'm glad you're going to be talking about diabetes because, you know, you mentioned kids in schools earlier. It turns out that after the year 2000, children born after the year 2000 have a 1 in 3 chance of developing adult-onset diabetes. And for the minority community, for the blacks and Hispanics, that's 1 in 2, so 50%. So it's just really, it's really a crime what's happening. The food environment that we've created in this country is basically, you know, toxic. And so diabetes is one of the unfortunate outcomes. And so I'm really glad that you're going to be talking about that.
All right, before we get back to the phones then, that's a good opening, Joy, just to mention there that the people who come to your Seeds of Change classes could be people who just want to change for ethical reasons we talked about, or they may want to change because they're sort of tired of feeling sluggish. We have Jill writing into us saying that people on vegan diets don't even need coffee. They have so much energy. But sometimes it's because they're concerned about diabetes and they think there's an opening to make a change. What's the impact for people who are at risk for diabetes?
Well, a lot of the research has shown that when people move more towards a whole food, plant-based diet, getting away from a lot of the refined foods, the refined carbohydrates, the sugary drinks, those things are vegan, but in many cases, but again, moving more towards a whole foods diet, they are able to better manage their blood sugars. Often there's weight loss because, again, the whole goal is to really, you know, that you're looking at the four food groups now being vegetables, beans and legumes, fruits, and whole grains. So you're really increasing the amount of fiber in the diet, really putting a good focus on a variety of vegetables in particular can be really beneficial because not only for the increase in fiber, but also vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and you get that sense of fullness. So you actually can eat a bigger quantity of food, but at a lower calorie rate, which really promotes weight loss. And we know that weight loss is also reducing obesity is also tied to reducing blood sugars, as well as cholesterol, blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many benefits to really beginning to incorporate this diet. But again, it's with a few caveats. It's not just vegan. It's also looking at low fat, and it's looking, and when I say low fat, I'm not talking about low fat products, reduced fat products, but more reduction in the use of added fats, like oils and, you know, butter, margarine, mayonnaise, like really reducing the amount of added fats in the diet.
And this is your fourth year for doing the Unity Diabetes Center Seeds of Change vegan classes. Have you seen people who were
definitely
in those initial classes?
Yes.
And you've seen the differences?
Yeah, a big thing we do in our classes is we really try to really teach people on the practical aspects of incorporating a whole food plant-based diet that's lower in fat. So we do a lot of cooking in front of people, recipe sharing, meal planning, grocery shopping tips, how do you eat out successfully, but really trying to help people begin to practically put this type of diet in place. And what we found is that people who are able to do that, we've had people come back and let us know they've lost 20, 30 pounds. Their cholesterol levels are down. Their blood pressure levels are down. Reduced blood sugar. So it's very exciting. It does have results.
All right. Every single phone line is now filled up. So I'm going to try to go as fast as I can to get through calls, and that's great to see. So we'll be coming to you and be ready to roll here. This is Andy in Rochester. Andy, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. Thanks for the show. I just wanted to mention a couple of things. I've been vegan for 13 years, and I feel like it's one of the best choices I ever made in my life. And for anybody listening, thinking of becoming vegan, it's pretty powerful what you choose to eat, and especially in our society these days, we feel powerless. You can choose to eat food that makes you sick, or you can eat food that's medicinal. And I feel like once you become vegan, and I'm a guy who used to eat chicken wings every Monday night, Burger King, never gave a thought to any of it until I decided to become vegan. I know where I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I know where all my nutrients come from. You have to learn. And once you learn, you're basically eating a lot of superfoods, kale, sweet potatoes, blueberries, walnuts, you name it. And once you become vegan, I feel like you step through this window to another world. And it's not really a diet. It's a way of life. And once you step through that window, I find it exciting. You're eating cruelty-free for the most part, heart-healthy, healthy overall, and it's unbelievably delicious. I'm very interested in food now. And the last thing I wanted to add is, in my world, most of the people I know who became vegan, and I don't think this should be kept down low because I think it's one of the most schizophrenic things we do in the society. We don't look at the animals we eat. We eat over 10 billion cows, pigs, and chickens every year. And for us, the only people that really look at it are people making money off of it or people who turn vegan. And it's pretty evil what they do in those industries. And if you, anybody in your life won't even look at the videos, and there's thousands of them now, what they do to the cows, pigs, and chickens. And I say that's the anchor to keep you there. Become vegan for whatever reason, but ethically, the meat and dairy industry does not care about you, the animal, or the workers that are working there. So anyhow, thanks for the show. But anybody think of becoming vegan, Google, there's thousands of recipes for it. And that's all I have to say.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, thanks for the call here. And let me also say that I'm somebody who's not vegan, but I went to Autumn's Harvest Farm in Romulus a few years ago and watched as they did. It was sort of like a mini Joel Salatin from Omnivore's Dilemma, the way they do the rotational chickens following the cows and the chickens pecking the cowpats and the way the soils are integrated. And I felt so much better about knowing where my food came from. And let me ask the chef in the room, do you want to know where the food that you cook comes from?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we try and source regionally, try and source responsibly too, as far as trying when we can to get meat that is, doesn't have a lot of hormones or antibiotics, you know, try to source from places that aren't factory farms. A lot of it is hard because in the society that we've built for ourselves, that kind of thing is so pervasive that but it can be done. And we definitely try and do that as much as we can.
Takes some commitment to it, and
oh,
let me ask the not only the man from Rochester Area Vegan Society, but a physician on the line, Ted. When you hear Andy talking about those benefits, are you doing it for the health reasons or for the ethical reasons or both?
Well, I'm doing it for all of the reasons, and I have to admit, back when we made the change back in 1991, it didn't sound like a particularly safe diet to me because, you know, I'd never heard of it. My parents didn't raise me that way. But I became really interested for the environmental reasons. And, you know, if everybody on the planet were to eat, you know, like Americans eat, we would need about three planet Earths. It's just not possible. So one way or another, we're all going to end up moving toward a vegan diet. But then as I read about it more and learned about it, I realized that a whole food plant-based diet, in other words, a healthy vegan diet, is way healthier than any other diet that's out there. And, you know, I don't like to use the word diet. It really is a way of life. Answer your question, why am I doing it? Mainly for the health reasons at this point, but also for the environment and for the animals as well.
Back to the phones. This is Pete in Rochester. Pete, go ahead.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for the show. It's great. Quick observation. I've looked into this. I'm not vegan, but I've looked into this as far as feeding my family healthy and keeping myself healthy, and read works such as the China study and saw the like the things that Dr. Colin Campbell advocates for. And my question is this: sometimes I feel like the and I'm seeing in other research that the connection between animal-based products and cholesterol is overblown, and they're focusing now more on just refined foods, sugars, and things like that in our diet versus the strictly vegetarian diet. So that's one thing I would like the panel to weigh in on. But, you know, one observation is sometimes I think that people hear the word vegan and think that's going to cure all that ails them, and they don't go about it in a healthy way. Somebody's already mentioned, you know, there are things that are very bad for you that are considered vegan. And I'm under the impression that the people, and the last caller alluded to it, the people that adopt a vegan lifestyle, the offshoot of that is that they become very aware of where their nutrients are coming from and thus create a healthy environment, which I think, you know, the same thing could be said for people that become very aware of their diet in general and incorporate animal products, but are also, you know, hyper aware of where their nutrients are coming from and really treat their body that way. So just my two cents on that, but I would like to hear about their thoughts on the kind of cholesterol food link, animal product link.
Pete, thanks for the call, Pete. I appreciate that. Let me start with Joy Valvano, the clinical diabetes educator for Rochester Regional Health System. What do you think, Joy?
Well, I think that, you know, number one, there is a spectrum, okay? So everybody's at a different point when they start to take a look at if someone's interested in starting a healthier way of eating. You kind of have to look at where you're at. And so sometimes people start with, you know, maybe getting out some of the refined foods are not quite ready to give up dairy, or then maybe they start looking at their milk and seeing if they can come up with an alternative milk that they like, you know, or getting the dairy out, or maybe getting rid of the red meat and eventually, you know, getting away from the animal products. There definitely is a link with the higher fat, higher cholesterol animal products and heart disease. So I do think that for health reasons, you know, you have to really do your research and be thoughtful about whether or not those are healthful products to include in your diet. But it really is important for everybody to do this journey themselves. I think it's really important to find out what works for you. And, you know, again, to kind of jump on that spectrum, and, you know, you don't have to be, nobody has to be perfect, but keep moving towards what appears to be a healthful way of eating for you. And it you know, it can be a process. It's a journey.
Ted Burnett from the Rochester Area Vegan Society, what do you think?
Well, I definitely think that there's a connection with levels of cholesterol. But, you know, cholesterol is not the only measure of health, obviously. It's really a risk factor. And what you want to do is you want to look at the actual disease process itself. So, you know, Caldwell Esselstyn and Dean Ornish have shown that you can actually reverse heart disease. I mean, you can get the arteries to open if you get people off animal products and onto a whole food plant-based diet. So, you know, regardless of whether your numbers are changing in the direction you want, what you really are interested in, what are your arteries doing? And the evidence really points to moving in the direction of a whole food plant-based diet and away from animal products for that.
Gordon in Canandaigua. Gordon, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Bo. My name is. I actually was quite overweight quite a few years ago. I think 1999, I switched over to a mostly vegan, plant-based diet, and it helped me lose weight, helped me get rid of my irritable bowel. And down the road, I actually became a trainer, started working in the Canandaigua area full-time, helping people with weight loss. And one of the things that I found for me as well as my clients, that as far as why a plant-based diet was so helpful, is I found that when people were overweight and they were eating just kind of their everyday normal foods, one thing that was the calorie density of those foods were so high compared to when I would eat a vegan diet. So just give you a couple examples. Like if you take broccoli, for example, if you compared that to, say, a chicken breast, you take 140-gram chicken breast, that's about 229 calories. To get the same number of calories from broccoli, I'd have to eat 11.5 cups of broccoli. If you took spinach, you compared it to Doritos, you eat one bag of Doritos, that's about 20 boxes or about 1,400 calories to get the same number of calories as that one bag of Doritos. And then a final third example is if you take a pineapple, one large pineapple, that's about 6 Oreo cookies to get that one large pineapple. So most people wouldn't be able to sit down and eat, you know, an entire pineapple, but you could easily plow through, you know, 6 Oreo cookies and not feel like you even put a dent in it. So I found that was something that's really helped with our clients to be able to have more volume in their diet from the foods that they eat. So when they really eat a lot of these plant-based foods, I think Barbara Rolls is one of the researchers who really talks a lot about this, about something, a concept called volumetrics. and just being able to eat a lot more food and be able to lose weight almost effortlessly in that way.
Thanks for the call, Joy.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with the caller.
Ted?
Yeah, you know, there was a study published in 2009 where they took 100 individuals who had diabetes, and they randomized them into two groups, 50 in each group. And one group was told, we want you to eat a low-fat, plant-based diet. Don't worry about calorie restrictions or portion control. And the other group is told to go on the American Dietetic Association diet, which means you have to count your calories and count your portions and really watch what you're eating all the time. And not only did the plant-based group, were they happier about it because they're not out there counting calories and like trying to figure out, you know, how much of this should I eat, but they also did better. They lost more weight. Their hemoglobin A1Cs improved that more. So it's really a very powerful diet, and the effects can be very rapid. Blood pressure comes down. Yes, cholesterol comes down, and people's blood sugars correct very quickly. So it's very powerful. It's amazing it's not used more. I think part of that is because it just, you know, it doesn't fit into the medical model. We can't sell a drug when we do this.
Or a product.
Exactly.
Rich in Rochester, thanks for calling, Rich. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I think there's a lot of good points about the vegan diets and all that. As far as, I would say the most important thing about the vegan diet is the calorie density. When it's all said and done, when you're eating a plant that is 98% cellulite, you're not going to get that many nutrients and calories out of it. Having said that, I don't think the approach is realistic in the sense that very few people can go to a vegan diet. You have to be number one. You have to really truly want it. And each person that has gotten on this show that has spoken about it, they've wanted it for a certain reason. But your average person who just wants to change their diet, it doesn't happen that easily. So I don't know. We have this way of presenting the exceptions as the rules. And I don't think that's helpful in many ways. We should talk about this stuff, but don't try to say the vegan diet is the rule. We have to be realistic in the approaches that we take. We have to look at it as a general population. The general population is not going to go vegan. And I think that's where the disservice is in that type of conversation.
Thanks for the call, Rich. Look, I appreciate that. I mean, let me first say that I don't think we're trying to present it as the rule, we're acknowledging that it can be tough and there are challenges. Let me also say that Joy and Ted can especially talk about this, but I'm sure Matt can talk about it as a chef as well. Even if you don't go vegan, if you go more vegan, if you shift more of what you eat away from processed and animal-based foods and more towards plant-based, Joy, what's the impact there? I mean, I don't know. Part vegan doesn't really make sense, you know, but
I think that you're only improving your health. And I think, you know, the caller's sentiment is not an uncommon sentiment. And I think one of the things we have to ask ourselves is, why is it so radical or strange to follow a whole foods plant-based diet? What about our culture makes that difficult and challenging? And you know, I would think that a lot of what's offered to us, both by marketers, you know, some of the biggest lobbyists are the dairy and the meat council. And I mean, I think that, you know, if we had a big lobbyist for vegetables and fruits and whole grains, that, you know, we may as a culture begin to see those are also equally good for us. But, you know, I think that it's still somewhat of a grassroots effort to really get the word out. Because if you really do look at the research, and the research is out there, and Dr. Colin Campbell, Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, Dr. Dean Ornish, Dr. Neil Bernard, I mean, these are the guys that have really done the research. It's all evidence-based. And if you read it, and watch the video, Forks Over Knives, for example, it's very hard to ignore the facts. And I guess that's what I would encourage people to do is just become better, do your research, and then make the decision yourself, because the information's out there, but the caller's right. It's not maybe as readily available, and you have to seek it out. And once the people who have sought it out, they are believers, because it's hard to ignore.
Ted, I've got about 30 seconds. What do you say to what Rich is, was saying there? What about his points about the fact that he thinks that's kind of an extreme point regarding veganism?
Well, I think it's an interesting point. I mean, is having your chest cracked open for surgery, is that radical, or is changing your diet radical? And, you know, I think if you talk to many, many cardiologists, they will acknowledge that a whole food plant-based diet is the best diet for your heart. And I think patients should be told that. Whether or not they follow it is something else. But if a doctor says ahead of time, well, he's never going to do it, I'm not even going to tell him, I don't think that's a service.
Ted, as we let you go, tell people where to find Rochester Area Vegan Society online.
So we're rochesterveg.org. That's rochesterveg.org. And we meet on the third Sunday of every month at the Brighton Town Park Lodge. And you can check out our website for what our upcoming meetings are.
Ted, thanks for the time. Thanks for calling in and joining the conversation.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Joy Valvano, if you want to get involved with the Seeds of Change vegan classes, as we've been mentioning, you can go to unityhealth.org or call 585-368-4560. They start a week from tonight from 6 to 8, four different classes, and in 20 seconds, they're going to learn what over 4 weeks?
How do you incorporate a plant-based meal plan into daily, day-to-day life?
How to cook at home with them.
That's right.
How to make sure what you're eating lines up, and how to do it maybe with a little bit of flavor.
Exactly.
Which is Matt Miller's job from the Owl House. Matt, people have been asking us all hour. They love the examples of recipes. If you got 20 seconds and you got one more vegan recipe, what's it going to be?
Okay, real simple. Get some frozen corn, dice up some carrots, dice up some celery and onions, cook them in a pot, a little bit of oil, throw some water in it. Diced potatoes. Boil that up, throw in all the seasonings you want, boom, chowder.
I love it. And I really appreciate you and the Owl House sharing your expertise and time this hour. Thank you very much. As Matt has been saying as well, they do vegan, they do all kinds of different things as well. Red Fern, Aladdin's, many others focuses on as well. A lot of good dining options in Rochester. Matt, thank you. Joy, thank you. Been a great hour. I'm Evan Dawson, and you've been listening to Member Supported Public Radio.